We hope and trust that you will find this Torah in Motion program meaningful. Through these programs, Torah in Motion encourages discussion, debate, and education about the most important issues facing Jews and Judaism today. Together, we can focus on creating religious commitment through an honest and sophisticated encounter with topics that are relevant to being Jewish in the modern world. For more information about this and other Torah in Motion programs, please visit the website at www.torahinmotion.org.
First thing I'd like to say is that nothing I'm going to say is my own. There are things that I borrowed from different sources, things I've heard, things I've read. Just building up. This is a speech I gave last week, and I'd like to share the same thoughts a little bit more elaborately. We say our prayers daily. Ashrenu matov chelkenu. How fortunate we are. How great is our portion. And we have to wonder, how much do we feel this? How fortunate do we feel? We feel fortunate at times, but do we feel fortunate because matov chelkenu, how great is our portion? Not enough, for sure. Do we walk around feeling proud to be who we are, to do what we do? We go to synagogues. We do acts of charity. We do it because we want to do it. But do we experience this element of pride? Rav Yitzchak Hutner Zatzal says that it used to be that the great masters of morals and ethics had to teach people how not to be too arrogant. Today, it's the opposite. Today, we are not arrogant enough. Today, we live in a generation of shefal ruach, downheartedness. We don't feel good or good enough. My Rebbe said to us many times, Veltuski, Shlita, that the ways of Musar today are not the way they used to be. Not to come down hard on people and to look down upon them, not at all. People want to feel good. They want to feel good about what they do. And if we allow people and we help them to feel special, that can go a very long way. That is the undertone of what we're going to talk about today. There's a midrash, the beginning of Echa and the Yalkut Shimoni. The midrash is an entire page. The midrash says that when God decided to destroy the Beit HaMikdash, it was a calculated thing. He says that as long as I am in the Beit HaMikdash, the enemies cannot penetrate. And so the only way to go about this is to remove myself. That's exactly what happened. HaKadosh Baruch Hu vacated the Beit HaMikdash, and immediately the enemies were able to penetrate. The Midrash goes on to explain that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw what was going on, he started to cry. And so, a master angel comes to God and he says, "Don't cry. Let me cry for you." God says, "No. If you don't let me cry, then I'm going to go into a very private, remote place where nobody can enter, and I will cry there. That place is Bemistarim Tifke Nafshi. In hidden places my heart shall weep." It's a hidden place. And so God says to the Malach, "Go and find Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, for they know how to cry." And there's a long midrash. The Malach goes, and he has a hard time breaking it to them. And they all cry, and Moshe Rabbeinu cries. And I'd like to focus on this idea. Tisha B'Av, we cry because we don't want God to cry alone. We want to cry with Him. And we also cry because for some reason we don't want God to go off in seclusion to this place called Bemistarim, hidden places where His heart and His soul weeps. We want Him here with us, and we want to sit and cry with Him. We will attempt to understand this. I'd like to go back one of the fundamental portions of our Torah. The Torah discusses the great sacrifice of Yitzchak. Hashem calls to Abraham and He says, "Kachna, please take et bincha, your son, et yechidecha, your one and only, asher ahavta, that you love so much, et Yitzchak. Take him and you will bring him to me and you will sacrifice him. You will slaughter him." Rashi, and it's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, says that the reason for this build-up, "Please take your son," which one? "Your one and only," well, one is my one and only, one is his mother's one and only, "the one you loved, the one you loved so much, et Yitzchak." The reason for this build-up, as one of the reasons anyway, is that more than being a physical test, a test of endurance, this was a test of mesirut nefesh, of sacrificing oneself by giving that which is precious to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when Hashem says, "Asher ahavta," that you loved, Abraham experienced the most intense feeling of love that a person can experience. And it was then that Hashem asks Abraham, "Take him and sacrifice him." It was an emotional test. The question many Mefarshim ask that throughout our history, unfortunately, there were many, many Akedat Yitzchaks. In certain ways, more extensive than that of Abraham, in that these people recently during the Second World War went ahead. They went through with it. They did slaughter. They were slaughtered. Yet, in our morning prayers, we say, Kemo shekavash Avraham Avinu et rachamav, just as Avraham Avinu had to conquer his mercy to fulfill your will, ken yichbeshu rachamecha. So too you should conquer your compassion. Towards us. Why is Abraham singled out as the one who conquered his mercy? There were many people, thousands, tens of thousands, unfortunately, throughout our history, that have conquered their mercy many, many times to do God's will. And so, why don't we say in the morning, in the same way that thousands and thousands of people conquered their mercy to do your will? So too, you should conquer your mercy to do our will. There's a way in which we relate to Avraham Avinu in a very special way. And that perhaps lies in the story of the Akedah. Torah says, Bayom HaShelishi, on the third day, Vayisa Avraham et Enav, Avraham lifted his eyes, Vayaret HaMakom Merachok, and he saw the place from far, the place where he would sacrifice his son Isaac. We know that HaMakom, the word HaMakom, is one of the many synonyms we use to describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaMakom Yerachem Alenu, HaMakom Yenachem Etchem, HaMakom Vayaret HaMakom Merachok. Avraham Avinu sees, he perceives HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God, Merachok, from far. It was the first time Avraham Avinu experienced such a distance between himself and God. He had known God as being a God of mercy and compassion and love. And that is the God that he taught people about. And now, Vayaret HaMakom Merachok, he's experiencing God from a distance. He doesn't understand. Perhaps this is the reason why we relate to Avraham Avinu in such a special way. We today are the generation of Vayaret HaMakom Merachok. We don't see God in His glory as previous generations saw God. The miracles of every day, His holy presence. We too are a generation of Vayaret HaMakom Merachok. We are a generation who see God from a distance. And perhaps that is the reason why we can relate to Him in our tefillot. Yes, it is true that many have done many things for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Avraham Avinu was the pioneer of this method of Vayaret HaMakom Merachok, of sacrificing to God when we don't understand. Not only when we don't understand, but when it is painful and when it is difficult. A little later in the Torah, God addresses Yitzchak Avinu, and He says, the beginning of Parashat Toledot, Ekev Asher Shama Avraham Bekoli, I'm going to bless you, your children, your descendants will be like the stars of the heaven, Ekev, because Asher Shama Avraham Bekuli. Because Avraham heard my voice, Avraham listened to me. This word Ekev means heel, the heel. Now the heel, because of the fact that so much weight weighs down on the heel constantly, is perhaps the most insensitive in terms of sensory nerves, nerve endings, bottom of the soul, than all other parts of the body. Perhaps the Torah is alluding to this. Abraham behaved in this way, ekev, without feeling. He could not feel what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted him to feel. This was very, very difficult for him. He had many questions. You promised me, but what about my descendants? What about this and what about that? There was no feeling. He didn't do it with love. He couldn't do it with love. He didn't understand. Ekev asher shama Avraham bekuli. Perhaps this is why we feel we can relate to him. Ken yichbeshu rachamecha. Because we too are a generation of vayarot hamakom merachok. We know that today we are the generation of Ikvata de Meshicha, the heel of Mashiach. We live in a time, we have lived in this time for many generations already, evidently, where the coming of Mashiach is imminent. Ikvata de Meshicha, we are the heel of Mashiach. And in that sense, perhaps, we are a generation that is characterized by the lack of feeling, the lack of emotion, the heel. But at the same time, we are the heel. The heel, although it is the lowest place in the body, but the entire weight of the body rests upon it. Although we are a generation that has to continue our dedication to God in a hester, in a hidden way, but we are the generation that all other generations rely upon. The eyes of all the generations are upon us. The type of work that we need to do is unique. During the famous Brit Ben Avetarim, the treaty that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made with Abraham between the halves, it says here, Vayhi Hashemesh Lavo V'Tardema Nafela Al Avram. V'hine Ema Chashecha Gedola Nofelet Alav. There was a tremendous fear and a tremendous darkness that came over Avraham Avinu. Rashi says, Remez Letzarot V'choshech Shel Galiyot. The darkness alludes to our galut today. The darkness is not only the lack of light. When you shut off the lights, you have darkness. Darkness was a creation. Velachoshech kara laila. It is an entity. Yotzer or uvore choshech. Darkness has a purpose as light has a purpose. And if darkness is the equivalent of galut, then galut has a tremendous purpose. The fact that we do not experience HaKadosh Baruch Hu perhaps the way our ancestors did. Perhaps that's a great thing. There's a great purpose in that. And if we don't feel special, if we don't feel the Ashrenu Matov Chalkenu, it is because we don't understand how special and lucky and fortunate we are. I'd like to share with you a story. It took place a long time ago, evidently during the time of the Crusades. The story is brought down in a roundabout way in the writings of the great Maharami Rotenberg, who was a great Rishon. A she'ela, a question, was brought to him. Now, I have to tell you that when my phone rings, these are not the types of questions I'm expecting. You have questions on kashrut, on taharat ha-mishpacha, on Shabbat. Let me tell you the questions that were brought to him. Yehudi echad, there was a Jew, who asked the Maharami Rotenberg if he needed a kapara, if he needed atonement for what he had done. What had he done? During the time of the Crusades, when he heard that the danger was approaching, he feared not that they would die, he and his family, but that they would be influenced. They would be tempted to perhaps forsake their own religion, like many had done, unfortunately, under such duress. What did he do? I'll tell you what he did. He took a knife, he killed his wife, and he killed his four children. The thing is that he expected to die. For some reason he survived, and now he wanted to know what he had to do. Did he need atonement for what he had done? Before we see the answer, look at the question. Vayaret ha-makom el-achok. This is a person who saw God from very far. And when faced with the challenge of living or dying, he took a knife and he slaughtered his beloved wife and four children. Says the Maharami Rotenberg, Kvar nitpashet hetero. The heter, the allowance to do this, is very well known. Of course, many have done so. And there's no question that what you did was the right thing. It was obvious, of course. Let the pride start building up. There's no other religion, let me tell you, in the world where people come to the Rabbanim with such questions. There were many such stories. There's a midrash in Bereshit. The pasuk vayalach et reach begadav vayvarechehu. Yitzchak Avinu smelled the odor of the clothing that Yaakov was wearing. Says the midrash, famous midrash, Bratan and Rashi. Begadav should be read bo gadav. His rebellers, those who will rebel. He smelled the odor of those who will rebel, and he blessed them as a result. I'd like to speak about one of those two, very appropriate for today. There was a person by the name Yosef Meshita. And the Midrash says that when the enemy wanted to enter the Beit HaMikdash, they were at the door, and they had to select the first person who would go in. So they said, let one of their own go in. This Yosef Meshita, unfortunately, had gone very, very astray from the path, and he had partaken in the destruction of the temple. So they said, you know, what better than one of their own? So they said to him, go in, and whatever you take out will be yours. So Yosef comes out a couple of minutes later with the menorah shel zahav, the golden menorah in his hands. So they said to him, isn't it true that a person who is not a kohen should not tamper with these items? Okay, go in and get something else. And whatever you take out will be yours. The thing is that when Yosef heard those words, something started to happen. He's thinking to himself, what? Our enemies will reprimand me. That's what it takes. I have gone so far that our killers and murderers have to give me musar, lessons in morals and ethics, and tell me, by the way, the menorah, that's not so good what you did. So when they asked him to go in again, he said, no. I angered my God once, I should do it again? And they said to him, if you don't go in, we will slaughter you. And he said, so be it. And that's what they did. They took him and they butchered him. Chachamim tell us that Yosef Meshita, his teshuvah was accepted. But again, another example of how in the darkness of darkness, where it could get no darker, at the moment of the destruction of the temple, Vayaret HaMakom Merachok, he saw God from far. He wasn't near, but he saw God nonetheless. I'll share with you a few others. One of the holy Tanaim we read about this morning, the 10 martyrs of royalty, 10 holy, holy tzaddikim. One of them was the great Rabbi Chanina ben Teradion. The Romans were returning from a funeral, and they saw Rabbi Chanina ben Teradion committing an unspeakable infraction. He was teaching and he was sitting and teaching Torah. They grabbed him. They wrapped him up in a scroll, in a Torah scroll. They tied him up. They lit a fire at a stake and they started to burn him. They took woolen cloth that was soaked in water and they placed that on his heart so as to prolong his death, his suffering. Of course, everybody was there, and his daughter, very painfully, says to him, "Erecha bekach, this is how I must see you." He said to her, "Don't worry. Had I been alone, I would feel bad myself. But I'm with the Sefer Torah. So don't worry." When God Yevakesh El Bonash El Sefer Torah Zeh, when God will come to claim the humiliation of the Sefer Torah, at the same time, He will claim my humiliation. Okay, so his daughter's concern was on a personal level. His Talmidim, his disciples, said to him, "Rabbi, ma ata ro'eh? What are you seeing? What do you see?" A simple explanation to that, they wanted to know if he could experience what was going on in heaven. Were there malachim crying? Was there turmoil? What was going on? One of the explanations is, Ma'ata ro'eh, what do you see? How do you see us? What do you see in the future? Could you see? Or are you blinded? And he answered them, "Gilyon nisrafin." The scrolls, the parchments are burning, yes. But the otiot porchot ba'avir, the letters are flying, are floating up in the air. He was telling them, the body, the scroll, might be burning, it's true. But the letters, the neshama, the spirit, Torah and mitzvot, those are things that cannot be burned. The story goes on to say that one of the soldiers, the one who was appointed to see to it that Rabbi Chanina is reduced to ashes, was impressed by something, and he said to him, "I can increase the intensity of the flame, I can remove the sponges from your heart, and you will die immediately. But I want you to promise me that you will take me into Gan Eden with you." He said, "Yes." The soldier says, "Swear to me." He swore to him. He increased the intensity of the fire and he jumped in with him and they both went into Gan Eden. But again, another example. There was no greater darkness than that. The suffering was excruciating. There was no greater moment of darkness in Rabbi Chanina's life. But that is where he found HaKadosh Baruch Hu. "Don't worry. These things happen. But the parchment can burn. The letters cannot be burned." Tisha B'Av, It's almost ended. The question is now, what do we do? What do we do now? Okay, so we mourned, we cried, we deprived ourselves of certain pleasures. Is that it? Is it finished? Tomorrow I'll go and I'll shower and I'll do whatever I need to do and life will go on. No. Something must come out of it. What do we do now? What do we do now? Now what we do is we get a tremendous amount of chizuk, of strengthening and courage to go further. That's what Tisha B'Av must give us. To walk away depressed, and certainly to walk away unfazed, is a waste of time. We must walk away from Tisha B'Av stronger. Tisha B'Av is perhaps the most positive time of the year. And that Tisha B'Av, it boils down to one thing. The understanding that our purpose today is to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitoch hester panim. In darkness, vayaret hamakom merachok. It started at the destruction of the temple, but we are living it today. Hopefully, we can walk away with a sense of pride for what we do. To feel proud. We don't do this because we were born to Jewish parents. We do this because we choose to do it. When I wake up in the morning and I put on my tefillin and I pray, I feel proud. I am happy and I thank God for having given me that privilege. I'm going to share with you two more stories, more recent stories. These stories that we cited took place a long time ago, and one may think, that's a long time ago. These people were great. Oh, perhaps not so much. There's a book, She'elot U'Tshuvot Mima'amakim, Rav Oshri, very well known, of questions and answers that were compiled as a result of the questions brought to the Chachamim, to the Rabbanim, HaChashuvim, during the time of the Holocaust. I'm going to share with you one of these questions. One night, soldiers entered the ghetto. They had orders from their higher-ups to slaughter 400 children. So they rounded up 400 children. They placed them in a room. And they would come back the next day to pick them up. One of the children's fathers goes to the Rav at night. And he says to him, Rav, I have a question. I have a way to save my son. I happen to have a gold filling, and I know that if I pull out the gold filling, I can bribe the soldier, and he'll let me have my son. So the Rav says, okay, what's the question? That's the question. The Rav says, I don't understand. You have a way to save your son? So what are you asking me? He said, I'll explain it to you. The soldiers specifically asked for 400 children. If I take my child, they cannot go back to their superiors with 399 children. What will they do? Will grab an innocent child and take him away. Am I allowed to do that? Let's take a pause. This was not a question of, I dropped some milk into my cholent. This was not a question of, am I allowed to do this or that? Question of life and death. What is the right thing to do? Do I save my child? Is that the right thing? Because if it's not the right thing, then I'll let him go. I'll kiss him goodbye tonight. You feel the pride? It should be felt. Ashrenu matov chelkenu. There's no other nation like that in the world. The Rav says, I'm so sorry, I can't help you. I don't know what to say to you. So the man went home, and he comes back very early the next morning, and he says to the Rav, Rav, I solved the question. Really, what did you do? It's very simple. I took the gold filling and I threw it away. And I yelled, Akedat Yitzchak. The sacrifice of Yitzchak. My son, Yitzchak. Perhaps there was a much deeper meaning in what he was saying. It was the same thing as Akedat Yitzchak. That's why we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ken Yichbeshu Rachamecha. Abraham understood nothing. It was a shock to him. Vayaret HaMakom Merachok. He did the exact same thing. Akedat Yitzchak. We'll end up with one more. The story takes place in Ukraine. Fortunately, we've had our share of suffering over there. There was a law in Ukraine that on Sundays, when the Goyim paraded in the streets with their crosses, that no Jew was to stand out in the street. It was regarded as a disgrace. And everybody knew about this. And if they caught a Jew on the street, they would kill him. There was a young lady who was a guest in the city. And she didn't know the rule. And unfortunately, she was caught out in the street. The authorities grabbed her and they said, we're going to kill you. And not just kill you. We're going to tie your hair in a ponytail and have you dragged by a wild horse bucking away. He will buck to your death. But you get a final request. Pins, please. Yeah, I want some pins. Get me some pins, please. That's my final request. Pins? Why do you want pins? She said, you'll see. Just bring me the pins. They brought her the pins. Do you know what she did with the pins? She pinned her skirt to her flesh. So that while she's being bucked to death, she should not compromise on the principles of tzniut, of modesty. That was her final request. We have to walk away from Tisha B'Av feeling a tremendous amount of pride for who we are. There is no other nation in the world like us. That's guaranteed. And when we do, we will be zocheh, we will merit great things. When Yaakov had to go down to Egypt. And he feared for his well-being. God says to Yaakov, Al tira, mirada mitzrayma, don't be afraid. Anochi, I ered imcha mitzrayma. I will go down with you. Eretz Mitzrayim was the land of filth. There was no filthier place spiritually on the face of the earth. God says to Yaakov, you're going, I'm going with you. Ve'anochi, and I, a'alcha gam alo, I will bring you out. You will rise out of Egypt. Out of your experience in Galut, you will undergo a tremendous aliyah, tremendous growth, twofold. Not only a'alcha, I will cause you to come up, a'alcha gam alo. When we live in a matzav, in a situation of hester panim, of darkness, where we don't necessarily feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the way that our ancestors did, we have to get a tremendous amount of chizuk, of strengthening and courage, from the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is here with us. And He's just waiting for us to find Him. And when we do, we will undergo tremendous aliyah, tremendous growth. One of the Hasidic rabbis was sitting at home, and his grandson had his friends over, and they were playing hide and seek. The grandson went to hide, and the boy, his friend, looked for him and couldn't find him, so he gave up. He went to sit down. And when the grandson came out of hiding, he was crying. And he says to his friend, why didn't you look for me? When his grandfather saw that, his grandfather started to cry. He says, that's exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is asking. That's what God is asking. We think He's not here. We think He's hiding. We think we're alone. We're just thinking that. It's not real. It's not true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu cries because we don't want to find Him. We're not looking for Him. We have to realize that the weight of the generations are weighing down upon us. And what we can do is greater than what any other generation was able to do. Especially today. The pressure is on. But you have to know that the satisfaction is great. Ve'anochi a'alcha gam alo. At the end, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take us out twofold. The greatness we can experience is far beyond anything we can imagine. I'd like to end off by thanking Rav Marat Atra for this opportunity. I hope that we won't have to do this again. Hamakom yinachamun. Thank you.
Okay, we'll take about a 7-minute break, and then I'll speak, and then we'll have our second video showing of the day. So.